given all that we know about the human race and about ourselves, is it reasonable to expect that God should love us? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, Emeritus Professor of Old Testament, Walla Walla University School of Theology. I am your host and study guide author. The theme for our discussion this quarter is God's love and justice. My conversation partners are Brant Berglund from the Walla Walla University School of Theology and Albert Handel, Walla Walla University Campus Chaplain. So let's go to our leading question. Given all that we know about the human race and about ourselves, is it reasonable to expect that God should love us?
Well, reasonable, I think, is a moving target. And part of the challenge with that is what's reasonable to one person isn't to another. I know things about myself that if God knows, then I'm a little surprised that he thinks I'm valuable. On the other hand, I'm also informed by things in Scripture that say that I'm his creation, and I know that things I've made are valuable to me. But reasonable? Oh boy, that's tough.
As a parent, I think I immediately go to the idea of, well, I am God's child, so God has to love me. But then as a parent, I think, well, I have children, and that's a complicated consistency there when it comes to how I feel about my children at all times. And so what's reasonable to me is inconsistent. I don't think I can project that onto what would be reasonable for God.
All right. Our lessons this quarter juxtapose the concepts of God's love and justice. Here are some crucial questions that help us address the tension between his love and his justice. One, which is the more pressing question for us? Can I love God or can God love me? What drives each question? Perhaps the more sensitive and devout person would be the one to raise the question, can God love me? The more skeptical would be inclined to ask, can I love God? Would you gentlemen be willing to tackle that question?
Which is more pressing? Yeah, with an understanding already in my experience that there is a God and that I know something about him, I find that his love for me comes first and draws me and my interest in knowing him better, that he would say that he loves me in spite of who I am, and then I come to say, well, if he wants me to know him, then I will do my best to do so, and my love then for him becomes an outgrowth of the more I know about him and who he is and what he does. It's kind of a natural consequence, I think, of the knowledge.
For me, I think I go to that, the complexity that's unspoken right there at the heart of John 3:16. For God so loved the world that whosoever believeth in him. And I have always focused on the wide, expansive inclusion described in whosoever, right? And I want to tell people who might not feel like they're in that they're in. But what is implicit in that word, whosoever, is the fact that it includes myself. And I feel like that is oftentimes such an incredibly difficult first step. I can tell you, Alden, you're included in the grand net of God's grace. And you too, Brant, the whole time, not quite sure about my own inclusion. And so for me, knowing that is true about me, and again, I can't speak for anybody else, but knowing that's true about me, the pressing question for me is, can God love me? That's the tough part for me.
And it's interesting, Albert, that you and I both jumped to passages in Johannine epistles or letters, right? You went to the Gospel of John 3:16, and I'm thinking from 1 John where he says we love because he first loved us. And it's interesting that love draws us to those books too.
The question is, can I love God? Neither one of you seem to move that direction.
I guess I don't find that as... We all read these questions through our own stories.
Sure.
And
sure.
For me, that isn't as hard as the second question, can God love me? I feel like the pictures that I see of Jesus as the greatest expression of who God is a lovely and lovable character. And so I long for that image. I'm drawn to that image. It's my own brokenness that sometimes is the cracked lens that I have a harder time seeing through.
Yeah.
And then the question, though, can I love God, does ask a question about my own ability to love deeply. Do I have that ability even? And so maybe there is a part of that that's not God-related, but again, me-related.
Yeah.
Do I have the ability to love deeply?
Now, our lesson this quarter links together God's love and justice. Is it self-evident in Scripture that God is both loving and just?
I don't know if it's self-evident. I think that's an ongoing tension.
We have trouble, I think, these days talking about what justice is, because often we use justice biblically, I think. I could be wrong, but I think a lot of people use justice as almost a punitive way of thinking about God. But justice, for instance, in the judgment scenes like in Daniel chapter 7, the kingdom is taken away from oppressors and given to the saints. Judgment and God's justice are always a reconciling sort of affair, right? And so God's justice is part of his love. I don't see them as inconsistent. There's plenty of times when the Bible uses judgment language for God as a great judge. But his justice also, he's promised at the end of Revelation that he's just and true in all of his ways and that he will avenge. He will avenge. I get a sense that God is just. Is it self-evident? Texts seem to say so, but there's pictures of Jesus that may not go that way.
Yeah, and I think that for me, and maybe you're meaning it in a different way, Brent, but you say texts seem to say so. And for me, I'm right there with you. The Bible does make claims for God's justice. Now, whether it is right. self-evident, that's a little bit harder for me to latch onto, because I look through stories that that seem to require an additional action on the part of God to bring about justice, and sometimes it's lacking. There's an extra word that needs to be said that I don't hear, an extra action that needs to be done to make things right, and it doesn't happen. Now, in the grand scope of things, the Bible would say that justice is eventual, that justice will come about. But self-evident, I think that's the ongoing question of why did God do it this way? Why did this story happen in that way?
Or why did he let these people suffer when they didn't do anything wrong? How long is he going to – theodicy questions, right? How long is he going to let this go on without apparent justice?
Now, one of the surprises that came to me as I worked through this lesson, by the time I got to the end, and I'm not sure that the author even intended this, I would say that love and justice are synonyms. And that kind of surprised me because initially, when you think love and justice, you think of love as being more positive,
right,
and justice being a little bit on the negative side.
That's what I was alluding to. Justice seems to have a punitive aspect to it.
In the way that we use the word.
Correct, correct. But not the way the Bible always uses it.
No, the Bible seems to describe it more as an equity. Like things are made right, things are made correct, but not in every case. Sometimes people cry out for God's justice, and that seems to carry the note of a punishment. Uh-huh. Like, Lord, bring your punishment. But the word they use is justice.
Now, is there a difference between Old Testament perspective and New Testament perspective of this?
I would say that they're both. God's love and justice are seen in both testaments. I would argue, however, that they emphasize them in different levels or in different ways. I think the New Testament picture of a loving God is emphasized more than justice. The Old Testament, the justice. And yet, that justice is always out of a God who cares for his people and cares for the oppressed, right? Yeah. That's always the case. So you can pick passages in both places to highlight both.
One of the things that I find troubling, and I suppose this is why I went into studying the Old Testament, is that the God of the Old Testament seems to be so violent. Whenever you read the Old Testament, there are bodies just lying everywhere. Whereas the New Testament...
There's only a few bodies.
There are only a few bodies.
Until you get to the end of Revelation.
Until you get to the end of Revelation, that's right. So, well, we have a few minutes left. I'd like to go to some of the key passages in our quarterly this time. And Exodus 33:15-22 is a... very interesting one. It's after Israel had rebelled and Moses had intervened on their behalf. And let me just read a few lines here from Exodus 33. Moses said, "If your presence will not go, do not bring us up from here. For how shall it be known that I have found favor in your sight, and I and your people, unless you go with us in this way? We shall be distinct, I and your people, from every people on the face of the earth." The Lord said to Moses, "I will also do this thing that you have asked, for you have found favor in my sight, and I know you by name." Now, that's really quite a remarkable story where Moses bargains with God, and we'll have a chance to look more at that concept as we go on. But that Exodus 33, where Moses intervenes on the people, is really quite a striking one. One other story that I want to mention here, and this is one which puzzles me, and I don't know why the author of the Standard Study Guide brought it into this particular lesson, but it's the wedding banquet. That is a rather vicious story. Now, the other thing, and I don't know whether either of you have any comments to make on this, but gentle, when Jesus handles people personally, he's pretty gentle.
Kid gloves.
Kid gloves.
Yeah.
But when he tells stories.
Weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Yeah, all of that.
Cut them to pieces, throw them outside.
So the wedding banquet, does that bring together God's love and justice?
I guess I don't have as much of a hard time with the drama and dynamism within a story as it's told versus what happens in real life.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said about a genre of storytelling that seeks to emphasize its point with extra flair. I think when Jesus is asked, how do you treat people? And we see how Jesus treats people, it's done gently and tenderly and kindly.
But he gets the hard stuff there through stories. And that story of the wedding banquet, I mean, there's murder, there's killing, there's all kinds of strange things that really are problematic. And then, of course, it finishes with this note, but when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing a wedding robe. And he said to him, friend, how did you get in here without a wedding robe? He was speechless. Then the king said to the attendants, bind him hand and foot and throw him out into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen. Our time is up. I want to thank my conversation partners, Brant Berglund and Albert Handel, and my thanks to our program engineer, Kristen Byerly, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.